This episode of the Builder Sessions is brought to you by Grind Coffee Co.
Hey guys, it's Avery Schofield from Rust Valley. Welcome to Builder Session. And hey, stay tuned. You're going to hear some neat stuff. You know what? There's just lots of neat stuff. So stay tuned. Builder Session, Avery Schofield, Rust Valley. Be there or be square, my friends.
Welcome to the Builder Sessions, a podcast where we chat with your favorite builders.
We get to know them, their stories, and hopefully inspire you to get off the couch and build something cool. I'm Hoff.
And I'm Rosie.
And on this episode, we have Avery Schof from Rust Valley Restores. We talk about how wrenching out of necessity as a kid formed his passion for building, how important work ethic and motivation are in pursuing any career, and we hear some pretty wild stories from his childhood.
All this and more on this episode of the Builder Sessions. Avery, welcome to the Builder Sessions.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Doing awesome. Thanks so much for agreeing to come on the show. We really appreciate your time.
Well, it was snowing outside and I didn't have anything else better to do.
Yeah,
that's a lie. My absolute pleasure.
It's awesome. So for those of our listeners who aren't familiar with you and what you're doing, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
My name's Avery Schof. We have a television show on TV, Rust Valley. Me and Mike work together, and sometimes we do our own thing and work apart, but we're still friends and we still do things together.
That's awesome.
So that's about it. We resurrect some cars from the dead, and I aggravate his life because he deserves it.
So how'd you, I have so many questions for you.
Let's get on to them.
So taking a step back, you've been working with Mike before the TV show. From what I know of you and the TV show and now that podcast that you started, and just your social media, it seems like you like to tinker. Now, did that start early, right? Like as far as your wrenching, your building stuff, did that start early or did that, when did you get into that stuff? Was it high school, shop class? Like where did we start?
What's the definition of early?
You tell me.
I got to think back on this a bit. I really got to think back on this a bit. It's been a while. I got to think back. I think it was about grade four.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I aggravated my dear mother enough, so she bought me a Keystone motorcycle. You know, the one that was on the back of a Princess Auto magazine?
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever had Princess Auto back in the day, but there was a motorcycle on the back of Princess Auto magazine, and being a full-fledged hillbilly, we had a couple Princess Auto magazines, and you sit back there, and as a small child, you sit there and just sit there and drool over this piece of shit. So, anyways, come time along, I don't know what happened. We sold a bunch of livestock or something, and we were in Edmonton. And what was the Honda dealership? Northern Honda, Honda something anyways in Edmonton. It was a long time ago. Anyways, we went over there, and I just had to have that motorcycle. So we drug it back home, and that's when my ability of dealing with things started.
So did you have, was it a brand new one? Was it used? Was it wrecked?
Like, oh, what? Sure, yeah. It was brand new, all right. Brand new about 10 years before I owned it.
Did it run?
It runs from approximately probably about 13 minutes.
And that's where the tinkering started.
Yeah.
Yeah, it had a Tecumseh motor on it. I think they were designed never to run. I probably pushed that motorcycle more miles than I drove it.
But you loved every mile, didn't you?
For a bit.
Until it got old.
Yeah. Anyways, it finally shit the bed. I parked it in the corner, and it sat there for probably 6 months to a year. And my neighbor, Brian Honing, he lived down the street from me, him and David, he got one, a similar motorcycle, and his was running. And then one day, his blew up, too. So we had parts laying around there. So after about 6 months, I convinced him he wasn't going to use that motor. He put a genuine Briggs & Stratton on his.
Okay.
And he had a bunch of Tecumseh motors. Not a bunch of them, but his motor was a Tecumseh motor. I can't even remember what the problem is. I think the piston broke in mine, is what happened. The rod, or the, I think the rod went out of it. It spun a bearing or blah. It won't really spin a bearing because there's no bearings in them things, but the rod went out of it. So I convinced him that he wasn't doing nothing with his to give me his motor core. So I brought it home and I plucked it all apart with a small hammer and a pair of pliers probably and a Kresner wrench. But I got it apart. Only wrecked a few parts probably, but.
And how old were you? How old did you say you were at this point?
I don't know, whatever you are. Well, it was about grade four, grade five, grade,
okay.
grade four.
Okay.
I think it was about grade four.
So I like 10? Old
you're in grade four.
Yeah, 10.
Anyways, jeez. We had horses. I couldn't stand riding horses. I'd like to make glue out of them. We use it for in your stamp book to hold the stamps in. The best place for a horse. Stamp.
Old glue stick, hey?
I tell you what, I chased horses. I tell you what.
A lot of horses in your background?
Yeah.
Don't even want to talk about it. It's traumatic.
It's quite hilarious. I look at a horse and I look at it, and these guys riding these horses, and I just look at them and I just, oh, that's really nice. I had the urge the other day to ride a horse, though.
Did you?
But it passed.
It passed real quick.
Yeah, that's right. I seen a horse.
So then you're working on this little bike, and did you end up getting, someone helping you?
I pulled it all apart. Again, take note, guys. There was no internet back in that day because you had nothing. There's nothing to tell me to talk to or anybody to look at or any parts manuals or nothing. Like, there's nothing. So I pulled it apart. I looked at it. I seen what the problem was. The rod was broken on it. So I pulled all the parts, pieces and parts on it, pulled it all apart, and jammed it all back together and went and talked to somebody about the timing sequence in it. And it was pretty straightforward. It took me two or three times to get it in there right. But I got it in there right. I got everything all timed up. There's a mark on the cam and a mark on the crank. And away you go, put them together, and it was all good. But that whole process probably took, I would say, probably took about 6 months to find all the pieces and get it together and work on it a little bit and get aggravated at it and go back and work at it and go talk to somebody up the street who was a little bit smarter than me. And anyways, I worked through it. I got it back together and put the piston in it. I didn't know nothing about clearances or anything. It fit in the hole. The rings fit in there. Compressed them, jammed it in there, and put it together. Used the original head gasket on it. Put it all back together, and it ran.
Awesome.
No way.
I was quite surprised myself. And then, of course, the pull cord had to come out of it. So I learned all about rewind springs. Got her in the lips about three times. So it was a learning experience for me.
Yeah, of course.
And I kind of always liked ripping shit apart, but even when I was really young. So it just kind of helped me out. It was the process of not wanting to do it. It was the need because I wanted to ride something.
Yeah.
And I wasn't riding no horse. I was good.
And your buddy with the Briggs and Stratton high roller down the street, he's cruising around and all you can hear is that thing.
Well, there's a story about that too. My dear grandmother, she's passed away, but I can tell you about it now. I traded the front wheel off our wheelbarrow to him for the motor. Oh, always wonder where that wheelbarrow wire went.
What happened to that thing? This is a nice neighborhood, Grandma.
I don't have a clue. I traded Brian the front wheel off the wheelbarrow for that motor core. That's how I ended up with the motor. Anyways, we rode around, got the rewind fixed. We drove them things for probably, I don't know, probably a year and a half. And it finally cratered. The clutch got so bad on it. They were horrible pieces of shit. It had a centrifugal clutch on it, and it would get hot, burn your foot, smoke, slip, chain would fall off. Like I say, it was quite a learning experience.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So that's kind of what set the pace, I guess, for getting into the deeper stuff of fixing stuff other than normal building tree forts and shit like that.
I'm just surprised or amazed at a 10-year-old having the patience over 6 months to work on something and stick with it. Because you look at the kids today now, they're bored after 10 minutes.
I tell you what, again, back in the day, we had no internet.
Yeah.
Our television, we had two channels, Channel 5 and CTV.
Yeah.
You know, I can still remember watching the first Mork and Mindy that come on TV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I remember it. That's a 6 mil. And Daisy Duke, remember her?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Who doesn't? Hey?
Catherine Bach. I tell you what, laughing memories.
So after that, then, how did you just start getting bigger toys, bigger machines to tinker with, or kind of explain how that first little bike build set you off?
I guess you got to realize, like, we never had any money. We didn't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. There was no money to be had, and you were in the middle of nowhere, so you weren't getting any paper route. Mm-hmm. Like, it was the necessity of digging through other people's junk and finding a piece of shit somewhere and resurrecting it. If you wanted something, that's what you did. So it was out of necessity that you fixed this stuff.
Going through, what was your first car then? Like, so what was, when you were 16, did you have something? Did you find a piece of crap?
I had stuff way before
okay,
then.
Yeah, yeah.
I got to think what my first car was.
You probably had a million of them by now.
I got to think about this for a minute.
This might be the Avery timeline from 10 years old to where you are now. So you're going to have to break into this.
I tell you what, there, again, I don't know what the hell I did. I had I got a calf, I think, and I ended up feeding this cow and then sold it at market. And I got, a couple $100. And I got more than that, about $800 or $1,000 for this cow. I sold it and I went and bought a brand new GT80 Yamaha. Mm. Yeah. I think I bought it from Waltz Automotive. I do believe from Waltz, or no, it was either Waltz or Powercraft, one of the two. Fort St. John or Dawson Creek, I don't remember. It's a while ago. But anyways, I had a brand new motorcycle, and I drove that and I wrecked it.
As a 16-year-old would.
I wasn't 16.
No?
No, I was way younger. That was probably, I don't know, maybe grade 6, maybe.
Oh, wow.
Jeez.
I hit a drainage ditch wide open with it, the front wheels. I hit a drainage ditch and bent the front forks right over and just instantly stopped dead within about 2 feet. Flew off. I didn't even leave the motorcycle.
Wow. It's
funny to break both my legs in half.
Just boom.
Anyway, I bent the front forks and I brought them to the local machine shop, Derek Machine at Fort St. John. There's a great big guy that owned Derek Machine. I can't remember what his name was. He was a big son of a bitch. Like a small giant.
Yeah.
And he brought him on the presser and I was all worried about it. He looked at me and started laughing. That's not a big problem. He walked over there to the press and squashed them all flat. And I jammed the back in there and drove that motorcycle. And then that catastrophic failure, the crank bearings went out of it.
Yeah.
So I split them cases. I must have been in about, I don't know what grade I was in then. It was either grade 7 or 8. I split the cases on that thing and put a new set of crank bearings in it.
Wow.
But I didn't do a very good job on it because I wasn't that knowledgeable about it. I bent the crankshaft and I put it back in, I think. Because it runneth them new bearings for probably about a month and took them right back out again. But I had that whole case split in half and all them transmission parts and got it all back together.
Wow.
But yeah, I think I bent the crank when I put it together. And I don't know what the fate of that motorcycle, whatever happened to that motorcycle. It had several crashes. Several interesting crashes.
I bet.
We moved to town.
Yeah.
And I got a job in a garage.
Okay.
To fix that motorcycle, no. I got a job at a garage. Dave Service, Dave Rowang in Grand Haven. I worked for him for about 2 years. I got paid, I think, $275 an hour.
Wow.
Now, back in the day, was that decent money as a... being a younger
probably
kid?
Probably not.
No.
It was slave labor.
Yeah.
I got enough money, and I bought another motorcycle. I bought a YZ100, and I think I bought that from Waltz Automotive, or not Waltz Automotive. I can't keep calling it Waltz. It wasn't Waltz. It was the Yamaha dealership in Dawson Creek anyways. I can't remember the name. Like I said, it's a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I drove that until I think I wrecked it too.
So you've been a little hard on your stuff.
Just a little bit. Yeah.
How many pairs of shoes do you go through a year? Like I go through so many.
Well, you got the same pair of rubber boots for how many years? Yeah. Right?
Them rubber boots. you can get about a year out of them, or a year and a half.
Oh, really?
Before the sole wears off of them.
Oh.
Yeah, that Dunlop's a good brand. They're a good boot, eh? Dunlop's a hell of a good boot. But I'm just about, there's some days that I just get sick and tired of wearing them. But I've wore rubber boots for probably 35 years.
People would look at, they wouldn't even recognize you if you showed up without rubber boots.
Yeah, it's just.
Hey, it's not.
Like Mike says, I'm too fat to do a places, so.
Okay, so you got this job at this garage. You're working through, and then so high school, you're working. Did you go to any post-secondary, or did you just kind of stay in this lane and just see where it took you?
Hey, I graduated from the School of Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, I actually graduated. But our shop teachers, now there's another story.
Yeah. Please, yeah.
We always love shop teacher stories.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have vices in your classes?
Oh, yeah.
Now, what happens when you get to catch a kid clanking the vice? Clank, clank, clank. What do you do?
Tell him to get the hell out of there. Just kidding.
Well, if we got caught clanking the vice, we sat there for a half an hour and clanked the vice after everybody was gone.
No way.
Oh, yeah. We were vice clankers.
Clank, 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 clank. The vice clankers.
Yeah. You know what? I had the fortune to have some really, really excellent teachers. I mean, excellent teachers in shop class, mechanics, and in our machining class. Excellent, excellent teachers. Like, Mr. Gibson was our grade eight shop teacher. I'll never forget the day that I was sitting there and a guy brought the guy was delivering oxygen bottles. And this guy had two oxygen bottles. He crossed them like this. He put them on there and he gave them son of a bitches a kick. I just pushed him just yeah. Right down there. The whole class is just looking at him like it was a miracle, eh? Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. What kind of things did you, what was like a really pivotal thing that you learned or took away from shop class? Not to clank a vice, I know that.
Don't clank a vice. I really don't know. As dumb as it sounds, did we get it? You know what? We got skill sets out of it.
Yeah.
You know? It was the very first time we used for layout, and you know what? I still use some of the, I made one of the, you know what a hermaphrodite caliper is? It's a set of points, like dividing points.
Yeah.
Okay? But it's got a crook on the end of it.
Okay.
And you use it for layout. So you divide the little crook on one side, and you pull it like this, down like that, and you use it for layout.
Okay.
So if you want to lay out a real quick set of holes, you just set it, and you go scribe, scribe, scribe on four sides. And they intersect, and you got a perfect set of holes for four holes in them.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So works good. So, yeah. You don't see them a whole lot anymore. They're called a hermaphrodite caliper. Why? They're not really a caliper. They're a set of points. But and then we learned about tempering steel. We built some pinch bars and stuff in the furnace.
Oh, nice.
And heated that up without trying to scald and burn everybody's shoes and arms and coats and everything else and burning everybody's shirt and holes in them. You know, stuff and just brand. We're a branding session, basically. Yeah. You know, like you'd never get away with that shit nowadays in school. Somebody'd be losing their minds. But again, nobody got killed.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It was hot.
Yeah.
Strawberry, cherry, you know, brown, straw, different temperatures.
Yeah.
And then it kind of come on from there. And then when we moved to town, I bought a couple old Land Rovers, I do believe they were. Land Rovers, a 63 and a 59.
Oh, cool.
And I bought two of them. The one front end was blowing up on one. And I pulled it all apart. That was in like, I think that's got to be in about grade eight, I think I did that. And pulled all that shit apart. Grade eight or nine. And wow. I drove them going four-wheel driving with them for probably about 2 years.
Hmm.
They sat out in the back and I sold them for $150. They're worth a small fortune today.
Yeah.
Like that 63 was in just, it was a mint shape aluminum body, but I took all the front discs out of it stuff. But again, it was not a necessity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you never had any money for anything and you wanted to drive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I didn't like walking. I still don't walk I don't like walking a whole lot anymore still.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it just, and a desire to piss with mechanical stuff, look at stuff, figure out how it works. But again, the skill sets in school that we got out of there, you know, we got the basics out of there. Grade eight basics, you know, hand tools, you know, how to put something in a vise and really put a mark on it, clamping the piss out of it in there.
Yeah.
Then we learned to get a set of soft jaws and put in there and, you know, learned all about hammers and you beat the shit out of something, nothing will ever fit again.
Yeah.
And the desire to learn and the want to learn and the need to take and learn in order to, you don't realize that you're doing it. The desire to drive something drove you to take and learn what you wanted to do and learn how to do stuff.
Yeah.
Through trial, it was all trial and error.
So your shop teachers was your dad or like someone in your life, did they kind of mentor you through this too when you're younger
no.
or you just figure it out? Yeah.
No.
Okay.
It was all, it was, it was real simple. It was, you figured out yourself, or like I say, it's real simple.
Are you walking or riding a horse?
Yeah, exactly. It's a perfectly good horse right there. I'm good.
You don't want to ride old glue stick?
What's that?
You don't want to ride old glue stick to town?
I tell you what, every time I lick a staff and put it in the book, I think that's a perfect place for a horse. I chased more horses than I care to remember. I was propped on the back of a horse at the age of about 1 year old.
Really?
And got to ride through like wet willow bushes slapping you in the face.
Jeez.
Like I spent a lot of hours on the back of a horse.
So you're like done. You're done.
I'm good. Then I had a Shetland pony, and we lived on the hillsides, and the saddle used to come over top of his head all the time. So going up a hill or coming down the hill, a fucking saddle would come off. You'd be riding on his head. You and the saddle would be on the ground. The horse almost stomping on you. I experienced some things.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Yeah. But.
So after high school, what happened? Did you go to trade school? Apprentice anywhere? Did you just get a job and survive?
I don't know why. It's really funny because half of my friends become mechanics, and I'm the one that fixed all their shit all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm the only one that didn't go get any papers or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I guess why. I didn't need to go get any papers. I just fixed it.
Exactly.
So why would I want it? There's no need to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I had several vehicles. The first car that I ever fixed up and sold was a 72 Nova.
Oh, cool.
I was in grade, what grade was I in? Probably, it must have been grade 10, 10, 8, 9, 10, 9, I think grade 9. I got a job at an engine rebuilding shop. But before that, I'll go back a little bit. I grew up in the oil industry. And when I was, I don't know, 14, 15 years old, about 14 years old, I used to drive water truck. My stepfather was an engineer, and he had the water truck on the job. And I drove water truck for hauling camp water for all 1 year.
Okay.
All in water when I was about 14, 15.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I bought a Honda Odyssey with that money that I made off that.
Those are awesome.
For all in water. Yeah. I had to come apart with that, too.
Just a solid, no rear suspension on it. You just jump not it and you're that. Bang.
You're the right out of you.
And you don't.
I wrecked it, too. Yeah. I wrecked a lot of shit now thinking about it.
One of my buddies had two Odysseys when we were in high school, and man, you jump that thing and you just bounce, and you could feel yourself getting shorter with your spine compacting.
I tell you what, it was hard on you. Then they come out with the 350 that had all suspension and everything, and then they had the 400 pilot, the good stuff.
Yeah.
But again, driving that water truck, I had a mishap with it, too.
Hmm.
They have spray bars in the back end of them.
Yep.
I got too close to the tool pusher's truck, and I ripped the end gate and the side of the quarter panel out of his truck with it.
So you're the true
$500. I got payroll deducted $500 to fix that truck.
Jeez.
Oh, man. That was a lot of money. Yeah.
It was back in there. That was fucking had to be the 80s, I do believe.
Yeah, still.
But yeah, but anyways, I drove water truck for a whole I guess there was that truck. It was in Montney. Just on the outskirts of Fort St. John, and I drove that water truck all summer out there because they had a drilling program out there. They drilled probably about 4 or 5 holes out there.
Okay.
So, again, I drove the water truck. But that water truck was awesome.
Yeah.
It was a gas pod. I learned how to siphon gas at a fairly young age.
Haven't paid for gas since.
Yeah.
It parked in the yard, and you had all these dirt bikes and stuff. It is gas. You 5 gallons of gas. That truck got pretty shitty fuel mileage.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was the local gas station for the local kids in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And you were the pub.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's 5 gallons over here.
Yeah. You're the attendant. But, yeah.
Yeah, the attendant. Yeah, it was the going joke. But yeah, it just kind of was accepted, I guess, that we stole gas out of it.
That's funny. Again,
back in the day, it was a different kind of fun.
Yeah.
Like it was just different.
More things were accepted.
We got into trouble, but it was a different kind of trouble. Like it just... You know what I mean? Like, he had wrecked shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was, get caught driving through ditches. You know, get caught driving a vehicle around the neighborhood with no insurance on it. I got several insurance fines.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's just, I don't know, you just did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a different, but again, through the course of all of this, you learned how to fix this stuff.
Yeah.
Out of sheer necessity because you didn't have enough money to let anybody else fix it or have anybody else fix it.
Yeah.
And it just kind of grew from there. And again, you just 90% of the stuff that I had was somebody else's junk. And that's why I guess fixing this old stuff up just kind of comes natural, I guess. You're just used to working on shit all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I've rebuilt several pieces of heavy equipment throughout the course, buy something broken down, no motor, no transmission in it, re-resurrect it and either rent it out or sell it. And just kind of the wheeling and dealing. But again, back a little bit, I worked at a wireline company and I worked there for probably 2 years. I was a shop boy cleaning up the shop. And then one of the guys that worked there, his friend had an engine rebuilding shop. So he asked me, I asked him all the time if I could go work over there. Aaron Bear Cohen was the guy's name. And I went over there and I worked for him for 3 years. I do believe I worked for him from grade 10 to just about grade 12 over there at the engine rebuilding shop. Mm. I did all the bottom stuff. I used to do all the torque converter bolts, the starters, and the exhaust underneath and the motor mounts. I probably pulled 10,000 350s and different varieties of them.
Yeah.
And then I rebuilt heads, a certain part, I rebuilt heads, probably about 9 million sets for 350 heads.
Wow.
Back they had a Sioux valve grinder.
Hmm. So you could do that in your sleep.
I tell you what, I see a valve grinder and I just started laughing.
Yeah.
Like I ground a lot of valves. And that's kind of who I learned my trade from, with fixing stuff again. Yeah, did I go to school? No, I worked in an engine rebuilding shop.
Well, some might argue that that's more valuable.
How was the learning curve at that engine shop when you first started in grade 10? Were you just a sponge soaking it in? Did you have a fair bit of experience from all your tinkering and fixing?
Oh, fuck no. I just wanted the money and I wanted to go home.
Hey, to each their own, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I guess at that time you really don't think about it, but yeah, it probably was. You were soaking everything and you just didn't realize you were doing it. You know what I mean? It was a fun place. There was all kinds of characters that stopped by there. There was all kinds of interesting stuff always happening there. All kinds of weird, interesting people. It's the first place that I seen a guy put a set of pinstripes on a vehicle.
Oh, cool.
That I'll never, I think the guy's name was Sean McKenzie, I think. He showed up with a little red toolbox and a weird looking little brush. And this guy wanted a set of pinstripes on a 240Z, and he walked up to that car, and he laid down a perfect set of pinstripes on it.
That's
and he just hit it like this and went, wow. And he just, down one side, and then he goes, that'll be $800. The guy said, I don't have any money. And he said, oh, that's okay. He grabbed his rag of varnish and wiped the pinstripes off. Jeez.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But that's just crazy. You know, it just, you learn your trade from that and doing stuff and seeing stuff and pulling stuff apart. And again, you don't realize that you're learning, you're just there and you just, it's just kind of what you did.
Mm-hmm. It's just life. You didn't think anything of it, doesn't sound like. It's just where you're going.
You didn't think anything of it. It was a job and you were too worried about you're going to go buy some booze and go get pissed and go chase some women that night. You know what I mean? You didn't think about it. But yet when somebody's shit broke down, you would go over there and fix it for them.
Yeah.
You know, and again, you never had any money. So if your starter blew up, you'd rip it apart and do the armature on it, put a new set of brushes in it, put it back together and away you go. Like I probably rebuilt 100 starters.
Yeah.
Ford starters are the worst. They're all fucking junk. There's never been a Ford starter ever alive that was worth rebuilding. When you take them apart, they're just done. Chevy starters, they're a little easier.
Yeah.
Same with alternators. You know, an alternator was $100. You could put a brush kit in it for $15.
Yeah.
Wow.
And a new rectifier and a diode trio, you know, and just put it in there and away you go.
Hmm.
How has it changed with internet? Having phones, you know, we talk a lot about that instant access to stuff. Do you think people like learn how to do something quality wise with having access to everything, being able to watch a YouTube video in 10 minutes? Oh, I know how to do that versus like yourself.
That's not the problem. I've rebuilt several transmissions off YouTube with great success. Like it's an absolute wonderful tool, like a wonderful, wonderful tool. But you got to pick the guy out there that knows what he's talking about. It might take you two or three guys to find that you're looking at that you actually like. Yeah. Like the guy, you go, yeah, I don't like that guy. The guy, I don't like how he explains. I don't like what he's doing. You're smart enough to know if a guy knows what he's talking about or not, and you just find somebody else and follow him. But the problem is, it's quite simple. Life's got too easy.
Yeah. Well, I think gone are the days of people from necessity. I need to get this fixed before I can go somewhere, right?
Well, the problem is my generation, the hardships and stuff that we went through, we see that and we want to make it better for our children. Mm-hmm. And in the process of doing it, we've pulled all the knowledge out of everything. You know, nobody knows how to fix nothing anymore. They just take it. They just go buy a new one.
Yeah.
You know, and the other thing with that is you can go buy a Chevy alternator for like $80. It's not worth taking a son of a bitch apart and putting new brushes in it. Mm-hmm. Like the tie and the brush kit will cost you, it'll cost you $40. So
it's a throwaway culture.
I still got some brush parts and starter parts and brushes and stuff. And, you know, the other day I did a starter on my 8BA flathead.
Okay.
254, I think, an 8BA, something like that. And I was laughing because I pulled it apart and I changed out the drive on it and put a new set of brushes in it. And I was just kind of laughing to myself when I was doing it. Like, I haven't did this in 100 years.
Yeah. It's interesting how much of a throwaway culture we have, right? Like, when I was teaching at this, actually at Hof School, we taught together for a year. I was teaching automotive and auto body. And I was trying to align my auto body class with like industry standard techniques, because up until this point they had done they made that panel, you know, the 1 foot by 1 foot panel on the roller or on the English wheel, and then the instructor would like smash a hole in it or drill or something, and then they had to patch it and use oxy weld it and then paint it, the whole thing. And so I was talking to one of the guys in the apprenticeship board. He goes, "Yeah, we don't do that anymore. Don't have them do that. No, no one's gonna, unless they're working in a rod shop or whatever." He said, "Just R&R." I'm like, are you kidding me?
The problem with it is all that knowledge gets lost.
Yeah, 100%.
And it's the problem. You take a nowadays machinist. Well, the son of a bitch can't run a lathe.
Yeah.
Unless you got a program, but he couldn't build you a fuck all off of it. 90% of them, they put it in there, they distance their piece, they chuck it up, they punch the code in, they sit back, look on their cell phone, and it chews away on the piece for an hour and shits it out, and it's done.
Yeah,
they're not machinists; they're programmers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, and again, when something happens or ever has to come apart, they won't be able to take and use it. The knowledge of it is lost. And that's the problem, I think, with just about doing 90% of the stuff we do.
Mm-hmm.
Is you know, you're a computer reader. You're not really a mechanic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're a parts changer.
Yep.
You put it on there, you scan it, you find the problem, and change a part out, I guess, until you get the right one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because the scanner says it's such and such, that don't mean it is what it is.
Yeah, totally.
As you know.
And it's like those arts, those dying art forms.
It's something that our generation, get this, go ask your class to go pick up a point, set of points in the condenser, send them to the parts store for it.
What? What does that
they
mean?
Go, what?
Or even a distributor.
Get this, my kid and my stepkid are sitting at the table about 10 years ago. One looks at the other and goes, "What's that black thing on the table?" One of them goes, "Well, I think it's a telephone, but what's the round thing on the front of it for?"
Yeah, it's got the handle thing. I don't know.
Yeah, it looks like a telephone, but what's the round thing for with the holes in it?
Yeah, and there's numbers on it. But they're not buttons. Yeah, what does that mean?
I don't know. I, myself, personally, I think we're headed down a horrible rabbit hole. Mm. And the one thing, good thing about it is human nature. We do have the ability to learn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But everything is getting so far advanced where it doesn't need to get advanced that it's creating a whole bunch of trades all on its own without doing anything. You know, you take an old 12-valve Cummings, it gets better fuel mileage than your common rail truck does.
Yeah.
Now explain that to me.
I don't know. I don't know what to say because there's, and then we're the switch from, I'd like to hear what you think about the whole switch, the push to electric. I think I know what you're. Maybe not. Dude, is that a Is that a story?
We can have a discussion about that. It's just my opinion, obviously.
Of course.
But you know what? As a society, we're not very fucking smart. We may think we're really smart, but we're a bunch of fucking idiots. People don't ask questions. Where does the lithium come from? Yeah. Does it just appear?
Yeah.
How's the power get in there? Oh, you plug it in the wall. It's just in the wall. Just plug it in there. It's good.
All the precious metals from the batteries, everything, yeah.
The destruction to build a lithium battery is probably 6 times worse than it takes to build any car.
Yeah.
Then they're all freaking out over a Volkswagen Jetta that somebody snuck through. Like, my fucking 12 valve will put more emissions in the air in one day than that illegal Volkswagen will in its entire life.
Yeah. And but, it'll get 3 times the gas fuel mileage.
Yeah. My Volkswagen, gets 4.6 per 100.
Wow.
I think the common diesel is about 18. But again, you see a lot of electric cars running around Lethbridge in the wintertime?
Nope. They're all parked at home.
Yeah.
Again, they won't run in the wintertime because the batteries are no good. Mm-hmm. The sun goes, they're good to probably, they're probably efficient to probably about 5 above probably.
Yeah.
You take your common cell phone that I'm using, set it outside at -5, and the battery, it'll kill the battery in it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so interesting.
Again, they're pushing all of this stuff, and everybody's all gung-ho about it. And it's got some serious, serious flaws in it.
Yeah.
You know, would you want to go to the hospital in the ambulance at 20 below with an electric ambulance? You'd never make her there.
It's a good point. And not to mention, everything that we buy is delivered on a truck, right? Yeah. Everything we buy.
The general population is bamboozled, not thinking that it's the latest, greatest thing with no problems. Nobody ever says anything negative against it. And anybody that does gets ridiculed over it. I don't understand that.
Yeah.
Like these Teslas, like, you can always tell a Tesla driver, they're the only ones doing the speed limit.
And there's you honking about, get the hell out of the way.
again, at the end of the day, what do? The thing gets great fuel mileage. How long is the battery good for?
Yeah.
More long. Yeah. How is it? How much does it cost to replace that battery when it goes?
$20,000 to $40,000. What's the value of the car after the battery needs to get done?
Yeah.
You can't buy any parts from anybody. It's got to go right to the Tesla dealership. You can't fix nothing on it.
You can probably
barely change the tire on it. It's about the only thing. And maybe put some windshield washer fluid in it.
That right to repair stuff.
You can't even change a headlight in it.
Yeah.
No.
I know. It's going to impact so many industries.
Because they see people starting to monopolize on things.
Yeah.
Like, again, you can't even put a window motor in a Chevy truck, for Christ's sake, without having it scanned to reprogram it for the window motor. You get a set of brakes on a brand new Chevy.
Yeah.
You can't. Because you need to plug it in order to take and retract them and everything else.
Do you really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can't do a set of brakes on a new Chevy. Ford's the same. I don't know. I'm driving a new Chevy. You can't do the brakes on it.
Huh.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
So wait, you have to electronically retract the pistons and the calipers? Get out of here. Wow. Yes. That's crazy.
You got to reset. If you're doing a foreign car, hence the Volkswagen, you got to go back there and turn the emergency brake back down with your little tool.
Yeah. Star adjuster and all that stuff,
the star adjuster was easy compared to turning them things back in and the other stuff, but it's all electronic on everything.
Oh man.
Like, if you don't have a scan tool and you don't have the right code for it, or the code to get in there that's blocked, you're not doing the brakes on anything. It's the same with bleeding brakes on stuff. If you don't have a scan tool, you won't bleed the brakes on probably 90% of the shit that's out there right now.
Wow.
What would it cost to get a scanner and stuff? For those that are wanting to, wrench on their stuff. Because
that's a big scan tool, right? That you need the one that you can get into it and start changing shit.
The problem with some of that stuff is, if it's a new vehicle, you can't get the download for it unless you subscribe to it.
Yeah.
And I think it's $30,000 or $40,000 a year to subscribe to it for, I don't know what it's called. Where my kid works, my buddy Brad owns a shop, and it cost him probably $30,000 a year to subscribe to the scan tool stuff.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
So they're almost pushing consumers away from working on their own vehicles
and
going to pay the $200 an hour shop rate for something back in the day where you could, brake job it with that. How long would that take?
You can't get the millennials out of the basement in order to fix it.
Touche.
Fair enough.
There's no use worrying about it.
Hey, I could snipe a guy from 10 miles away on Fortnite, though. Hey?
And then, you know what the problem is? They come out of there and think they're a sniper.
Yeah. Yeah, Call of Duty, man. That's what it is. Oh, I hear
it. Like something really strange, though. It's kind of, speaking about Call of Duty, you know what the biggest problem they had when people joined the Army? What do you think it is?
It's got to be something to do with, I don't know, hand-eye, yeah. Something like that.
No. Killing people.
Oh, they just do it.
No, they don't. The generation, whatever, say, I don't know, two or three generations back or whatever the hell it may be.
Yeah.
The problem was they wouldn't shoot anybody and kill them.
Hmm.
They were scared. They were scared to shoot them. It was immoral to kill them, and they wouldn't kill them. Yeah. And I know that because I know all kinds of weird people I talk to about shit. But you know what solved the problem?
Call of Duty.
Call of Duty.
That's what I mean. That's crazy.
They played Call of Duty. They love killing people, and they went over there. And I do believe that they have it when they do their stuff and their training, that they do play Call of Duty there. And it solved the problem from shooting people, as dumb as that sounds.
That's crazy.
Wow.
That's crazy.
But I get back to the thing of the electric cars and stuff. It's everything has its place. They tried it back in the 1800s or the 1900s, the early 1900s. It all has its place, but it's not. There's the technology isn't there to support it.
Yeah.
And infrastructure. Yeah.
But the problem is they lie to the people, and the people are stupid enough that they believe them, you know, because we're inherently led to believe what we're told. Mm-hmm. Well, it's the inherent how we're put together, you know. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. People take advantage of that.
Believe everything on the internet because it's all true.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's how I live my life. Yeah. Okay. So fast forward, or not even fast forward, but you're working in the shop. You're out of high school now. You're wrenching. You're fixing stuff. You're working different places. Where did you go from there, and to get to how did and how did Rust Bros start?
I worked on the pipeline for a bunch of years.
Yeah.
Small inch pipeline to Fort St. John. I did that, and I started the rental business down here on the shoe swap that I did for approximately about 23 years. I rented boats and jet skis.
Oh, okay.
That's how I met Connor. Connor worked for me for three years.
Yeah.
Connor worked for me for 3 years in the summertime of my rental business back in the day. And that's how I got to meet his dad. And we'd come down there and he'd go in the lake and leave a ring around it. And fisheries would come and think it's gas. It says, no, Mike was just swimming in there.
Yeah, I think he got a gas leak. No, Mike was here. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, you know, and it just come from there.
Mm-hmm.
And we become friends. And like I say, I was friends with Connor and his dad come by and we just started bullshitting and we become good friends. You know, we had the same shit in common about buying and selling junk. And it kind of just stemmed from there, our friendship. And then Mike was on Highway Through Hell a little bit, blowing up rocks and stuff. And one of the producers on the show quit and started doing his own thing and looked at Mike and said, Mike, you're a good character. We want to do something with you. And he seen me and Mike one day talking about something, arguing about something, being idiots towards each other. And he says, God, I love the way you guys talk to each other. Yeah. So
there it is.
They put us together and the rest is kind of is history.
Yeah.
You know, the right time at the right time, I guess.
Yeah.
So
holy smoke. So what have you noticed about your life that's changed since, or has anything changed? You just keep being yourself, or is there a lot more demand on you now that they're, you know, you're a little more known in the public eye? Like, what's that experience been like? Is it the bigger pain in the ass? Like, what?
It's interesting.
Yeah.
There is problems that occur that the normal person will never experience in their entire life. And there's other things that occur that normal people will never experience in their entire life, good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
We get to see stuff that is absolutely breathtaking. We get to see car collections and stuff that the general population has no idea they even exist. And let me tell you, there's some incredible car collections out there that people have in their houses that you never know about.
Mm.
Like, I mean, incredible stuff that people have. You know, that we get to see, we get to meet all kinds of people. We get to go places that the average person doesn't get to go. It, it's it's got a good part, but that we do pay the price for it. You know, it's just, if you're having a bad day or whatever, stay at home. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, me and Mike have this discussion, you know, it's, you know, somebody's looking up to you, they come over there and talk to you. And if you're rude to them, it's not a very nice thing. Mm-hmm. So you kind of, you know, be nice to people. Even if you're not having a good day, just still be nice. And if you don't want to be nice, stay at home. Yeah. You know, hurting people's feelings and stuff like that is we're both very boisterous and whatever, but it's something that we kind of, you know, if you're not having a good day, somebody's aggravating you, just work around it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good thing, a good philosophy for anyone to take on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the world would probably be a way better place if a lot of people
took
that on.
If you woke up and you were feeling like a bag of crap, just stay at home.
Yeah.
Like it's, again, we don't, the other weird thing about it is we don't travel too far from home. Mm. Like we live in probably a, I don't know, a 50 kilometer circumference of where we're at. So we don't get out a whole lot. We're not around a whole bunch of people. People come from all over the world and see us, but we don't get out a whole bunch. We just come back from SEMA. There was 160,000 people there. It was, we both look at each other and go, this is kind of interesting. And when you go somewhere, don't plan on seeing anything. That's the other thing.
Yeah, fair enough, eh?
Like, we signed, I do believe, in 6 hours. There are 2 different days, 3 hours apiece. We signed 500 autographs, and we took probably about 1,500 pictures, you know?
Yeah.
But it was enjoyable. It was fun. We had a great time meeting people, doing stuff. But again, don't get in any hurry going anywhere.
Yeah.
The other good thing about it is people buy you free food. You get free food sometimes.
And beers probably, hey?
More free food than beers.
Well, that's
but
good.
Yeah. But nice. We had a wonderful time in Vegas. There's a wonderful bunch of people there.
How was the cruise down?
Interesting.
That's a pretty long drive for you from what Shuswap to Vegas. What? How many days does that take?
It took...
How many days should it take?
2,600 kilometers.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Mike drove that piece of shit Chevelle is down there, and Blair drove that old wagon, that station wagon is down there. It was like riding with the Clampets. Yeah, but it was good. We got to see a lot of stuff. It was a long drive. It took us, I think, almost, well, it took us 2 full days to drive there, a full days of driving. But Mike's car, Blair's car, everything drove down there flawlessly.
It's awesome.
There wasn't a problem.
Was that your first time at SEMA?
Yeah.
Was it?
I tell you what, it's big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. You got to pick where you want to go and what you want to do because you're not going to see all of it. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. If you're not, you know, you just pick where you go. Every time you turn a corner, there was something new. There was something go, where? Well, how did I miss that? How did I miss that? Oh, where did that yard come from? Where did that come from? Like, there's stuff there that you just didn't see.
There's like a whole building devoted to wheels and tires. A whole building. Or two, probably, at this point.
Statistically speaking, supposedly, it's the equivalent of 100 acres.
Wow.
Jeez.
There's no way. I went down to, I was working, when I was at that custom engine place, we took some customers down, and I was there for 5 days. 5 days in Vegas is too long in Vegas, but we had customers down there, and we didn't see it. There's no way we saw. And this was back in 2009. It's probably twice as big now.
You know what? The problem with Vegas, I love it to death, but it's so fucking expensive.
Yeah,
we paid, I think it was $6 or $8 for a can of Coca-Cola at SEMA. You know, two little rice bowls, and two cans of pop was $48.
And it used to be the other way around, right? You used to be able to get
$4.99 buffet.
Yeah. Cheap buffets, right? Yeah. Cheap beers on the strip or whatever. I remember that. But
again, look at it this way. Breakfast was about $20.
Wow.
Yes. By the time you leave your tip and everything. Now translate that back into the conversion of 1.35.
Yeah.
You're looking at 40 cents on the dollar. So that's $4 on every 10. So that's $28 for breakfast for one person.
Jeez.
Not your A&W bacon and egg, hey, that you can pick up in the morning.
There's no Timmy's over there.
Well, there's no, yeah, you can't get it either. They don't have any clam juice there.
Yeah.
But it was a good time. Like yeah. I say, absolutely wonderful people we met at the event. Like wonderful people. That's and amazing awesome. Products. It was just, it was, like I say, it was just overwhelming.
Yeah, it's something to see for sure.
It's something everybody should yeah. see. Again, you go there with the intent of seeing everything. If you see a quarter of it, I'd be impressed.
Yeah, 100%.
Will you head back down there in future years?
I would probably go back again. Yeah, if somebody sponsored me to pay for everything.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
I tell you again, it's expensive. Like, it's expensive.
It's crazy down there.
I probably would go back again.
Oh, yeah.
There's the stuff that you see is just absolutely, again, it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
100%. There was probably 200 four-wheel drive lifted up trucks
yeah.
that are probably worth $200,000 to $300,000 a piece. And just 100 of them.
Just the money flowing through that place.
Didn't
eh?
Gale Banks have a C20 there? With the, was it a supercharged Duramax or something?
If you look on Gale Banks' site,
yeah,
you can see me doing an interview in that truck.
Really?
Oh, okay. Did you? Yeah, so I. How was
I,
that?
I actually met him. We got along very well, actually.
Yeah.
Very, very well. And I did a little thing on air density.
Hmm.
And okay. I give my kid a hard time about him wanting the 80 pounds boost. And I'm telling him he's an idiot. Air density, like I say, he's a very intelligent man
yeah.
that you know, you can take at him. Everybody don't get along with everybody, but take and listen to what he says because he's got some science behind it, eh?
Oh, yeah.
But you sat there and talked to him. I filmed in there a little bit about doing a few things or talked about his truck and whatever inside there. If you look on Gale Banks on Instagram or wherever it is, you'll see me on there giving him a hard time.
Okay, so I have a question for you. Two-parter kind of. Getting back to your builds and things that you've built in your life, what's the one build that you've done, even two? There's probably been so many that really sticks out to you. What's one of the most favorite things that you've built? And it can be a car, it can be whatever.
A bike
it is.
From when you were
some sort
10
of
years
rig.
Old.
Yeah, whatever it is, piece of equipment. What's one that you're like, oh, I love that thing?
You know, probably the motorcycle I did. I'm so pissed off about selling it.
Yeah.
On the show there on season one or two or whatever it was, that Harley. Mm-hmm. It still pissed me off that I sold it. This guy wanted it really bad and I needed the money, so I sold it to him. And if I ever win the lottery, I'd go back and buy it off of him. It still pisses me off.
Really?
But it is. You can't fall in love with everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's true. And second one, dream build. What's one thing that you haven't been able to build or the unicorn? What's that?
My dream. Yeah. Is one that I just touched a finger on and just drove away. That'd be my dream build.
Yeah. The one that you haven't spent any money on.
Yeah, just somebody just, yeah, go here. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I honestly, don't know. I can't answer that question.
Yeah.
I just really can't answer that question. I'm not, I know what kind of car I would like.
Yeah.
I like old stuff.
Okay.
I was at a really, really interesting restoration place here this year. It was R&M Restoration in Chatham, Ontario. I seen things in there that the average person will never see. Like you can have your Chevys and you can have your Camaros and all the rest of that shit. Well, I tell you what, I was surrounded by Duesenbergs,
yeah,
Gullwing Mercedeses,
cool.
Enzo Ferraris, 250 Californians,
wow.
Genuine Le Mans GT40s.
High-end stuff.
I was looking at this one car, looking at the dent in the back corner of it, laughing, going... A little bit chauvinist, but I was going, I wonder whose old lady backed into this son of a bitch. And the guy started laughing because the piece is in the corner. I said, what is this car worth? He goes, that car's worth $12 million.
Holy shit.
Yeah. That's nuts.
The most expensive car that I've ever been in with my rubber boots It's Duesenberg.
Really?
$10. Yeah, they let me climb into it with my rubber boots on. Yeah, get on in there. He said, start her up. Quite a process to start it.
I bet.
Ignition on, turn the key over, push it in, turn it, starts, pump it a couple times, roll it over. Really a cool car.
That's cool. Hmm. And was it, Jay Leno has what, like four Duesenbergs or something?
Yeah.
That's cool. And they're huge, right? They're not a small vehicle.
They're a big car. I asked him what the most expensive car in the world is. And he said one of them that come to his mind, my God, I forgot the actor's name. Cary Grant. Son of a bitch. It just left my mind just like that. One of the actors anyways from the 40s, his Duesenberg. An SJ has supercharged one. I do believe he said it's one of the most expensive cars. I just can't remember his name, but that's what it was.
That's crazy.
But there was stuff in that restoration shop. That one Duesenberg, they're so cracked on it. They had the wrong crankshaft in it.
Really?
And material. And they're looking for a crankshaft for a Duesenberg. Because the build is, I don't know, $4 or $5 million probably for this build or even more. I'm just kind of guessing. Yeah. Has to be at least that much. And it took them a year and a half to hunt the crankshaft down. Wow. Do you know where they found the Duesenberg crankshaft?
I want to say something crazy, like somewhere in Europe somewhere, or like Saudi Arabia, or somewhere down in
Texas.
Or no, I bet you it's going to be like Saskatchewan or something.
Grand Prairie, Alberta.
Oh, jeez.
There it is.
They traded the guy a brand new rebuilt motor for his crankshaft.
Wow.
That is, and they tracked it down. It took him like, I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years or something to track this crankshaft down.
How do you track that down?
I never got into it, but I can phone him and ask him.
Well, that's the same thing too. When I'm watching your guys' show and just some of the stuff that you find and or like the parts, like some, for some of the rare stuff that Mike had on in his lot, and oh, we need this part, and you go hunt it down. Like, where do you like? The internet only takes you so far because a lot of these old guys who have this stuff stored away in their shed in the back 40, they're not advertising it.
It's pre-internet.
Yeah. Word of mouth. Yeah.
Everybody kind of knows everybody. It's a small little culture. And a Bob don't know who has it. Jerry may know who it is. But Sam has a guy that has a friend that has a cousin that has a brother-in-law that divorced his sister. Yeah. That's a cousin, that's uncles, that's a welder that may have one.
Yeah, but you don't want to piss the welder off because then he knows a guy who has way more parts. And you, he likes a jar from time to time, so you got to bring him that.
Exactly. And it kind of works. And that's how that culture is.
Yeah.
Like, it's not half these guys that got these parts, they're like me. They don't even know how to send email. But they got pieces and parts and they know them stuff. Yeah. Like Mike, as much as he aggravates me, any car that he had 500 cars. Mm-hmm. And to this day, if you ask him a certain car that's in his yard or show him when it was sold, he can tell you where he got it from, what the options are on it, and how much he paid for it.
Wow.
That's
impressive.
It still amazes me to this day. You just ask him and he'll tell you.
I can't remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Well, you know what? Neither can he, but he remembers. Probably, yeah.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Okay, so if someone's trying to get into mechanics, let's say, or building, wrenching of any sort, or working in a machine shop or this industry, what's some advice you want to give them?
I think they should make their money the old-fashioned way. They should just marry it.
Skip all the hard stuff.
You got to have the ganas, the desire to do it is the big thing. You got to have the drive and the desire to do it. And if you have the drive and the desire, you will succeed. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
If you go into it half-assed and half-handedly, you won't.
Do you see a change in young people nowadays? With that drive, do you think there's been a shift, or do you think it's shifting back? Like, where do you think we're at with that in our society right now?
Our society has taken a turn. Every culture in the world has crashed and caved into itself. May it be the Romans, may it be the Chinese, may whoever it was, has all crashed in and folded into itself. And just saying, looking around at how things are doing, how nobody wants to work, how you can't find two people to show up on time.
Yeah.
And there's a problem happening. Is it going to get solved? More than likely not. Because inherently in human nature, we're lazy. I know I am.
Yep. Me too.
And if you've got drive and there's nothing there, why would you want to do anything? And it just kind of trickles downhill.
You see that every day in the shop and in school too. There are kids who want to be there. Gone are the days of the farm kid who comes in knowing how to rebuild a small block Chevy better than you can. And, you know, those kids are few and far between. We have kids that show up, and they show up at bell rings at 8:10, which is pretty late as it is. And then they come strolling in at 25 after. And, oh, I was getting a breakfast sandwich from the canteen. Well, pardon me, sir. Would you like a side of fries with that? Like, what do you want? Am I here to serve you, or are you here to learn, right? Like,
oh, no, you're there to serve him. It's changed. And if you say anything, you're in the wrong, and you're the worst human being that's ever walked the face of the earth.
Yeah, for sure.
And accept it that way, that everybody has rights. And that's fine. They'll just write themselves right out of whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. You try to get your roof fixed in another 10 years and see how it works out for you. You might have to go buy another house that the roof don't leak in.
at 25% interest. We won't go into that.
Again, as I said before, I think we've got a hell of a problem gonna happen. There's nobody taking any trades. There's no plumbers, no electricians.
Yeah, they're screaming.
Nobody wants to do anything.
Yeah.
We were chatting at lunch today, and I'm talking about the kind of the same thing, how to, you know, getting these people to work and stuff. And I thought, where's the statistics of how many kids get fired right out of high school because they don't show up to work, they're on their phones? You know, I'd like to see some stats about all these numbers, about the laziness
you gotta kiss their ass and they won't show up the next day. There's no stats about it. Look at them sideways, dude. You hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
I want a good kick in the ass.
Yeah. I want to know how many they're getting fired for just being lazy or bringing their phone out or being stuck to their whatever.
Again, you can't fire them. Who's going to replace them?
Yeah, that's true too.
True. Yeah.
The employer is held ransom.
Yeah. Mm.
Like you can't fire them. You can't even talk to them because they won't come back the next day.
And you need that body there. Yeah.
Well, the problem is, and everybody's demanding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they all want stuff. They want it right now. There's nobody there. I don't know. It's very interesting. I don't know. Again, every society has crashed and caved into itself. Are we on our way to that? I don't know.
I had one of my friends is a service manager at a dealership, and this one kid they hired comes in late a few times, didn't show up, didn't even bother calling in. Finally, they gave him a ton of chances, warnings, everything. Finally, they end up letting him go, and then the kid's mom comes in and says, "You can't fire my son. You blah, blah," just starts tearing him a new one. "You better lawyer up. And he goes, "Ma'am, I got the best lawyer in town, so you better be ready for a ride because this ain't high school. I can fire your kid if I want to fire your kid." Like, that's it. And he's like, I could not believe that this, well, because there's a lot of snowplow parents in school, but like that translating into the real world now, into a job, like, isn't that embarrassing for that kid, 18-year-old kid? "Mom. Or, Mom, can you come in here? They fired me," and getting Mom to come in and advocate for you.
Again, the parent is no better than the kid.
No. Yeah.
How about you have a conversation with your kid and maybe chat about why you were fired instead of going in to try and bail your kid out, right?
It's real simple. You're a fucking idiot.
Exactly.
What the fuck is that?
Yeah.
Well, they've been probably 13 times. Oh, you can't talk to them like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, totally. Do you find
at the end of the day, it's very interesting, and not in a good way.
Yeah.
Why do you think half of Mexico will be here pretty soon? They're the only ones that want to work.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, they go, you don't want to do it, and the government gets handed out free money. So what do?
It's true. And a lot of those jobs, people think they're beneath them, right? Oh, I don't want to work at McDonald's, or I don't want to be a garbage truck driver, or whatever. All these lower level jobs.
I was in Kelowna, I don't know, it was last year or the year before, and they had the thing out, the board out there. I think they were paying $23 an hour starting wage at McDonald's.
Jeez.
They couldn't find anybody to work.
Wow.
That's crazy. I was getting paid $6 an hour at the grocery store when I was in grade 9. I think I worked a full 2-week shift and I made $300 and I was jazzed. You know, now there's kids making $16-18 an hour starting. I mean, obviously costs of living have gone up, but still that's, and they still think they're getting underpaid, being paid $18 an hour to flip burgers or sweep a shop up.
You know what? You asked the question before about a skill set. There's nobody got a skill set anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Self-parking cars. You got self-doing this cars. You got self-driving down the goddamn road cars to keep in the middle of the line. It works good if you're pissed, I guess. You can put it on self-drive. You'll make it home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are some technical skill sets that you think would be good to develop getting into this trade or industry?
The ability to work. Yeah. Be a hell of a good skill set.
Yeah, that's probably a good one,
there
eh?
There we go. The one and only.
It's probably a good skill set to have.
Yeah.
Like... It there's a skill set. There is none.
Yeah.
Again, the ability to want to do something and work is you know the skill set that you need, mm-hmm. and it's just not there. You know what I mean? What's the? Here's a question for you. What was the price of a Model T 20 years ago?
20 years ago.
What's the price of a Model T today? I fixed up one. It's dropped about a Model T about 20 years ago. It was about $25,000. You're lucky if you can sell one for 10 grand right now. But why is that? The whole society has changed, and everybody that likes them cars are old. Are there an old folks home can't drive them?
I never knew that. That's interesting. Hmm.
You go to a car show. How many young kids do you see at a car show?
Yeah.
About 6, and the only reason they're there is because they want to go to Dairy Queen after. They follow their dad.
Grandpa, or yeah, exactly.
Because they're hauling their ass to that car show, and they're making them do it.
Now, in saying that, the very interesting thing that I seen when you were at Turnham and Burnham, that was the most amount of young people that I've ever seen in one spot.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolutely wonderful to see.
Yeah.
You know? But muscle cars, that stuff, it's a dying breed.
Well, there's like
your $100,000 muscle car in 10 years, it'd be worth about $8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody wants it.
That's fair. And you'll never get.
Nobody wants it. That looks really nice. Yeah. You got 8,000 hours into a vehicle. Somebody walks by and goes, oh, that's really nice. Just keeps on walking.
Yeah.
Mm. Don't realize what it takes.
Yeah. It's true. It's very true. And shows like Overhauling and those types of shows, how they say, oh, yeah, they could do a full resto in 7 days. It's like, that's not helping the industry at all either.
You know, the power of television. The average car that we do there has probably got 2,000 hours in it.
Yeah.
Jeez.
But we get her done in about 40 minutes, eh?
We're just good. Wizards, you guys.
Yeah. Just get her done. Yeah.
Have you seen that as far as your dealings with customers and you having to like teach them, actually, this isn't real. That's not reality. Like it's going to take a long time and it's going to cost you a lot of money.
That's where Mike's a fucking idiot because he doesn't do that. He will not. He does truly 100% get hosed on every one of them deals. The only one that he makes money on is me and Connor's the only one he fucks.
That's why he keeps you around.
For both me and Connor, he's out for his pound of flesh. A stranger will come in there. Hell, you'll give him $30,000 off his vehicle.
Yeah.
But again, nobody realizes what it takes to do it.
It's true.
You know,
and appreciates it too.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, the average kid will say 25 years old has no desire to ever own a muscle car. Does not know what it is. Does not care about it.
Yeah.
He's looking at some Honda around the corner. That might be an all right shitbox.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Has no desire. That's a dying breed.
Do you think that do you think it varies though from place to place?
Oh, without even a question, it does.
Yeah. Cause I know like where we're at in Lethbridge, there's that Street Machine weekend we have every year. And there's Friday night, there's a big cruise, like probably a couple thousand cars that show up. And then they have old 100-foot drag races. It's a tradition they've had for 40 years. And then they have the car show on Sunday, and there's crews. There's like thousands of people lying in the streets watching people burn out and doing, you know, like how it was.
People will show up for destruction, hence burning out.
Yeah, good point.
they'll show up for destruction. 5 years old, 8 years old, 108 years old. They all show up. We all like to get wrecked.
Yeah, that's a good point.
They'll show up for that. A car show, they go look at a bunch of shiny shit.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You'll find nobody under the age of about 40 there.
Yeah.
You go take a look.
Or at the concourse, let's say you go down to Pebble Beach or whatever, at the Concourse d'Elegance or whatever that is, the 100-point cars. What's the average age of those guys?
About 200 years old.
Exactly, right? That's a good
point.
Nobody
gives a shit.
Yeah.
They do not care. 20-year-old, 100, who gives a fuck how many points it has? Does it have Bluetooth in it?
Yeah.
Has it got a cool seat?
Yeah. What size of subs?
Yeah.
How do we change that, Avery? How do we change that?
Does it have self-parking?
Yeah. Will it wipe your ass after you? Is there a toilet, porta potty in there?
I don't know.
How do we change it?
But now again, in saying that, you know, even me driving these old cars, when we do stuff, I get to drive just about every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you what, I love the style. The style, you cannot beat it.
Mm-hmm.
The creature comforts, you drive the fucking in the mailbox, you'd probably walk home.
Bring a good pair of shoes.
Or boots.
I tell you what, we have progressed so far in the automotive industry, we don't even realize it. Somebody looks at these old vehicles and go, I want to drive this every day. I go, well, really? You'd be lucky if you drive that thing an hour before you're out of it.
Yeah.
If you do not retrofit this stuff, it'll kick the shit out of you.
Yep, that's fair.
You know, but again, the styling is absolutely breathtaking on it.
Yep. Yeah.
But the creature comforts is like equivalent to going to your outside shit house.
Yeah.
At about 40 below.
That's a Honda Odyssey rear axle. No suspension, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, so last question, wrapping up here. Top three starting out tools for anyone who wants to get into this building stuff, getting into automotive, let's say, or tinkering, whatever it is. If you had to start over and you could pick three tools to put in your toolbox to start, what would they be?
A good impact gun.
Electric?
Air
or
electric,
air?
Yeah.
Well, nowadays, very few people use air.
Yeah.
So it would be in a good, nowadays, if you're talking nowadays, it would be the best impact gun that you can possibly buy. Is the first thing that you would need in there. The second thing, again, depending on what you're doing, you're doing body work or you're fixing mechanical stuff.
Let's go mechanical.
It grieves me to say this, but back in the day, you'd want a good set of Snap-on hand tools.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, don't mean to badmouth the brand, but you can get a good set of hand tools nowadays that are equivalent to Snap-on without buying Snap-on. And you know what? You know, and the last thing, a really good hammer.
So you can break shit?
Yeah, exactly.
You still need to beat the shit out of stuff.
Exactly. That's interesting what you said about Snap-on, because I remember when I went to tech school, they had 50% off Snap-on, and I was like, oh, I got to get this Snap-on.
Hook, line, sinker.
It was all, yeah, they saw me, they had big windows in that place. They saw me coming from a mile away. And then because there's this like pride ego thing of having like Snap-on, the best tools. And now you're seeing, it doesn't even matter. It's a wrench is a wrench is a wrench is a wrench. And the quality has kind of shifted, hasn't it?
It's just really to keep price points up and everything has shifted and changed.
Yeah.
Like you can put a Canadian tire wrench next to a Snap-on and at a glance, you can't tell the difference.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, you can buy one Canadian, you can buy a whole set of Canadian tire wrenches for one Snap-on wrench.
Yeah. And what are you paying for? Just the brand at this point.
And to start out, why go into all that debt and spend all that money on, you know, why not have more tools to get going and then specialize?
At the end of the day, it's a pride thing.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yep.
You know what I mean? What are you going to drive, a Volkswagen Super Beetle or a Mercedes?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, the shit boxes will both get you to the grocery store.
Exactly. Ford or Chevy or... Right, like it's all interest and pride, and you know whatever brand you're loyal to, I guess.
But again, the three tools, you need a good impact gun, you need a good set of hand tools, a good set of hand tools that aren't junk.
Yeah,
you know you don't need to buy top of the line. Something about three quarters of the way there. You know, a bad set of hand tools, you might as well go beat yourself over the head with that brand new hammer you got, because it'll strip every bolt off that you have.
Yeah.
You know, the third thing I think is you need a good light.
Oh, okay.
You know, good set of hand tools. You need some lighting to see what you're doing.
A treble light, old fashioned cage treble light with a 50 foot cord on it.
They're dangerous.
Yeah.
One of the worst burns I've ever got is from a treble light bulb.
Yeah.
I tell you what, there's still a mark on my arm from it. I don't know which one. It's somewhere on there if I look hard enough. It burnt me so bad, it probably burnt me third degree burns off of a light bulb off of a treble light.
It's crazy.
Well, you get a little water and then a bulb explodes.
Yeah, they explode. I've gotten some shrapnel in my skin from a treble light because there's those rough service ones. So it takes a lot for them to explode, right?
Oh, sure, yeah.
And then,
you all got rough service light bulbs.
Sure you do.
The light bulb in there lasts about 1 minute. You drop the prick three times. And then you're in the shithouse looking for the light bulb. There's somewhere that's going to be missing a light bulb somewhere. And the rough service light bulb is a thing of the past. you only got two of them because they were $8 more than a normal light bulb. And so that worked out really good.
And they're the same thing. And they're just painted with a – they're just a little cloudier. That's all it was.
They got a skin of rubber on them. When they blow up, it conceals themselves. But, yeah, they were dangerous. And probably the best event ever was the LED trouble light.
Absolutely. Well, Avery, I want to say thank you for your time today. This has been awesome. We could spend hours listening to your stories.
There's a few of them in there, I tell you what.
But I love it.
It's a great trade, and it's nice to resurrect some of this stuff. And you know what? To bring a total piece of junk and watch it go down the road and breathe new life into it, it kind of puts a smile on your face.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you want to take it and bring it to the goddamn car crusher, make paper clips out of it before you're done with it. At the end of the day, when you work through it and finish it, it gives you great pride.
Yeah.
Doing it, so.
Absolutely. So as we kind of close up here, what do you got going on if you want to promote anything, and where can people find you?
I'm over in Lee. I'm in Lee Creek working on some junk. If they're driving by, stop by and say hi. I get visitors all the time. Mike's over up the way in Tappan. And I'm looking to get adopted. If you got a really nice house, yeah. A free cell phone and some heat,
I'm in.
Give me the address. Yeah. I'll be right over.
I'm in. And you got that podcast though too that you started.
Yes. I'm just in the process. I'm doing a few more of them. I got a whole bunch of interesting people all lined up. The guy with the diving helmet behind me, he's my next guy that I interview. And I got a few other interesting individuals. There's lots. I come across a whole bunch of really interesting individuals.
That's cool. That first one you did with Mike, I just want to say it was really good. It looked just like the set that you had. It just looked awesome.
Yeah, did you like the eating scene?
Yeah, it was awesome.
I don't know if we'll ever do the eating scene, but we'll take it.
Just the banter.
Helmets there and stuff. There's all kinds of wonderful, interesting people in our neighborhood that you talk to every day and have no idea who they are.
Yeah.
And you get talking to them and you go, wow. And you know what? I enjoy talking to people.
Everyone has a story, right?
And a great story sometimes.
Exactly. Thanks again so much for coming on. We really appreciate your time again. And hopefully we can have you on again and have some more stories.
No, maybe. Maybe. See where I'm at.
Maybe
over talking over you.
Yeah, no, that's okay. Maybe our paths will cross again in the future. If you come down to Tournament Burnham again, or we'll do something, that'd be cool. Take you out for lunch.
I tell you what, I never pass up a free meal. Look
free
at me.
Food.
All right. Avery, thanks again so much. We really appreciate it.
My absolute pleasure, you guys. Thank you so very much. And you guys have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Hoff.
Thanks, Rosie.
And we'll catch everyone in the next one.